At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, last week, Mary Kennedy placed Peg on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Look at Niamh Kavanagh, Eurovision winner, is appalled. Appalled.
No, I'm not.
Ah, you are. It's okay.
I loved Peg, as in
you
I didn't understand what the hell was going on in it. But I have to say, I almost thought of talking about Peg.
Did you?
It or not.
Really?
Because actually Peg was such a pivotal part of my life when I was young. I think it. Yeah. I never realised.
Well, there was a surprising amount of love for Peg on the text line, I had to say. I thought most people would have my reaction, which I thought, sorry, Mary's picking what?
I know, but here's the thing about it. We can look affectionately back on Peg when we're not getting tested about it.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Yeah, I know. It's like afterwards, you look back on your school days. What those great days.
Lovely.
I mean, if I went back there, I'd probably bloody hate it again. Anyway,
okay.
That's not what we're talking about. That's what Mary Kennedy picked last week. What book are you putting up on the bookshelf?
Okay, I'm going to put a book by Maggie O'Farrell called The Vanishing Act of Esme Lennox.
Tell us about this book.
Well, this book actually is, it starts with this... These sisters who are, I suppose, Edwardian times in India, the Raj kind of thing. And it's a lovely setting and all, it's lovely. And then suddenly it turns out that one of the sisters is in an asylum because her father had her committed just because. You know, and back then it would have been part of the Lunacy Act, basically, that you could be just put in the asylum because you were aggressive in a marriage as a woman or, you know, maybe just displaying wanton behaviour, shall we say. Just if your dad or your husband decided they wanted you in an asylum, they just put you in. It was very strange the way they could do it. Anyway, that's not necessarily the main crux of the book, but it is kind of what it is. So basically Iris is this young woman in Scotland and she discovers that her grandmother is in, well, she knows her grandmother's in, she has Alzheimer's, and then suddenly she becomes this legal guardian for this aunt, this great aunt that she never knew she had, who's been in this asylum for many, many years. And so the story is basically about these three women and how Esme ended up in the asylum and why, and also how Iris comes to terms with that and also how she comes to terms with her grandmother's Alzheimer's. And it's told from the three different perspectives. Now, it sounds very deep and meaningful, and it is in some ways, in the sense that it's really interesting to see the way the actual whole thing works out. It's kind of like a thriller. And the wonderful thing about Maggie O'Farrell is there's literally 280 pages in this book.
Okay.
You know, so it's very concise. She writes beautifully, like really very descriptive, very lovely. But it's really, you're really interested to see why she's in there. And then there's a whole conversation about who remembers what. And it's told from the three different perspectives, like the woman with the Alzheimer's, the granddaughter who had no clue and is trying to figure it out and is also trying to figure out her own life in her mid-30s. And then...
And they all have very different interpretations of what happened.
Little bit. And then there's also something quite shocking that happens at the end and then there's sort of revelations. But the reality is I didn't put it down from the second I put it up. You know what I mean? When you pick up a book and you can't stop reading it, that's always a good indicator of how you feel about a book. And the other thing is, I never actually knew that. I kind of vaguely knew that people could be thrown into an asylum for no good reason. But this is like proof. This is based on real facts as such.
Okay.
Not necessarily a real story, but basically on real facts.
I'm always kind of fascinated by that, how, say, within families in particular, how different people will interpret things in completely different ways.
Oh, yes.
I don't mean just a kind of a row over the dinner table, but, you know, in retrospect, people will say, you know, my upbringing was awful or mine was great. And
totally.
You know, two kids with completely polar kind of opinions.
Living in the same
house
with the same parents.
Yes.
I know, we got a lot of that going on. So, I mean, essentially, this is what this book is about and I really love it. The thing about this is I read this maybe about 15 years ago, right? Along with another book maybe that I read in my 20s, right? And I'm going to reread it when I move into my 60s, which is coming much closer than I really want to be talking about. But the thing is, the reason for that is I may identify more with Kitty and Esme by
then. Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Because I read a book called Ladder of Years years ago called by Anne Tyler. I bought it in the airport. I was forever buying books in the airport because I was always reading and reading because I was traveling so much of the time. And in my 20s, I read this book, right? And I loved it. It was a very sad book because this woman, you know, was sad and disaffected and left her family and, you know, got up off the beach one day and felt invisible to her family. And so therefore went off and created this other life. Now, not very successfully because she could hardly get a job or nothing. She'd been a housewife for years and her husband was very successful on that. But they actually, it's all about how the family reacts to it, how she reacts and how the dynamic is. And I thought it was very sad and a very deep, meaningful book at the time. And then I promised myself in my 40s I would read it again. Hmm. And when I turned 40, I did read it again. And I spent quite a lot of time laughing because obviously I understood the nuances much better.
Yeah.
You know, you take it very seriously in your 20s and your 40s going, oh, for God's sake. So it's very interesting to revisit books like that. And so I have it scheduled now. Maybe I'll, not less so that, but definitely The Vanishing Act of Esme Lennox. And that's the one that I would recommend to most people because it really enthralled me as a book. Yeah. And Maggie O'Farrell's writing is beautiful. I love good English when I'm writing.
Do you gravitate towards books with female protagonists?
I know it certainly looks like that, but actually currently, well, I suppose you might say, because currently I'm rereading my Witches Abroad, which is Terry Pratchett, right?
Yes. I've never read any Terry Pratchett book now.
Well,
none of the Discworld novels. That's him, isn't
you.
It? Yeah, none of them.
Do you read any fantasy?
Not really. Not a huge amount, no.
To be honest, when I was asked to come on here, I really wanted to talk about a Terry Pratchett book because Terry Pratchett changed my life in the 90s, right?
Okay.
When I discovered him. However, it's very hard to sell fantasy to people who don't understand about fantasy. And the thing is, they have this concept of who reads fantasy, right?
Yeah.
And who you have to be to read fantasy.
Yeah, I didn't realise you were one of these weirdos who dresses up and goes to Comic-Con, things like that.
I only dress up to go to Eurovision, to be fair. But no, it's, you don't have to be that. You know what I mean? And that's the point. And then the other thing is that Terry Pratchett's Discworld is, there's a lot of parody, there's a lot of fun in it. The humour is exactly the type of humour I love. I grew up on The Goons and Spike Milligan and all that. I've got a very weird sense of humour and Spike Milligan once told me that, so I have that official.
Oh, wow.
I know, best compliment, second
That's
best compliment
good.
I ever had in my life. Like, but the thing is,
what's the best?
Well, the other one, well, I'll tell you another time. Another story, just to make sure you get me back. But the thing is, Terry Pratchett is so funny and the parodies that he comes in and there's a lot of wisdom in his books and fantasy. Yes, there's witches, wizards and all that sort of stuff. But basically you will recognise a lot about life and the things that we leave in this. And it's a bit more now in the sense that, you know, people love Game of Thrones and all that sort of stuff, which is fantasy based, but it's not quite the same.
So how did it change your life, Terry Pratchett, in the 90s?
Well, I was with my cousin and he gave me a book called Pyramids, which was my first Terry Pratchett book. And that's when I fell in love with him. And I devoured the first seven books, Pyramids was the seventh book. And then I had to wait, like the old fashioned way, for the book to come every year. It was my Christmas present from someone in my family until 2015. So that's like 25 years of Christmas presents of Terry Pratchett books.
Wow.
So much so that when the last book came, right, the last book came, The Shepherd's Crown, it was released the year that he died. And I couldn't read it for about 4 years because it was almost like saying, that's it, now it's done.
Oh, when you read it, it'll be finished. You can't go back. Yeah,
very sad. But you know, the thing is, every time a new book came out, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm so excited to read this, but I'm nearly afraid it's not going to be as good as the last one. And it always was. It was often different, but it didn't matter. And the characters come back and you fall in love with the character.
Yeah.
And death is in every single book and you become mates with death. You know, it's kind of an unusual thing. But the humour in it and the wisdom in it is magnificent, you know, and I love the Discworld. And there are millions of people love Discworld. It's not, but it's very hard to sell fantasy to people who have never read fantasy, if you understand what I mean?
I know, but it's a great testament to any book when you say you're sorry it's finished.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Know.
Or you wish you could stay with it. You know, so many books, even good books, you get to the end and you're kind of, that you're kind of glad it's over. Not glad, but you're content, right? That's fine. That was a nice story. Done
without
and dusted.
A doubt. Yeah.
And you forget about it. By the time you're one chapter into the next book, you've forgotten about the last one.
I know.
But a great book is one you get to the end, you're like, sorry this is finished.
And you know, the other thing is then you miss the people that you've become friends with in the book or that you're annoyed with in the book. All of those people, you miss them. The great thing about Terry Pratchett is he brings them back in different stages and not always as main characters. So you never really truly lose them. It's it's, I suppose it's like a soap.
Yeah.
But not that I watch soap. But when you're asking me, is it mainly female? It's not really. I read literally the back of the cornflakes box if it's waiting there long enough. The only thing I don't read is horror. And the only reason for that is because I get very involved in things and I travel on my own a lot. And that's not ideal.
Oh, really? Okay.
Weirdly, I'm okay with serial killers. But I...
Really?
Yeah, I'm okay with the serial killer there, but not horror. I kind of really struggle with
that. Not the make-believe violence.
No.
The real violence that actually happens that you could be a victim of. You don't mind that?
No, I'm absolutely fine with that. I don't know why that is. But I would read anything. I can read anything from what would be considered trashy, even though it was right.
Is Terry Pratchett, is that the only fantasy you would have read, or have you tried other things?
No, I have. Obviously, my teens, I read The Hobbit, which is my start into... The fantasy world. And I would have read the likes of David Eddings and all sorts of really fantasy writers. And I loved it in my teens. I don't know that I necessarily moved too far into it beyond that. Once I found Terry, he was my life in the fantasy world. And it felt like I was maybe, you know, cheating on him if I read too much.
So would you always have a book on the go?
Always, always. I love it. And not always physical, although I love a physical book, because obviously if you're travelling and running, the other thing I do is I listen to a lot of audiobooks because
I'm
in the car.
Oh, do you? Yes.
I'm in the car for hours at a time sometimes, you know, because I did 40,000 miles in my car last year. So you can't physically read in that. Mm. And you can't always be listening to music, because if you're working in music, you're just doing music for like maybe seven hours.
Yeah, you need something to give you a bit of headspace.
Yeah, so a bit of podcast or maybe audiobooks, and it's amazing.
Or news talk. Come on, Niamh.
Always.
Yes, thank you.
Always.
Chris has texted in, Terry Pratchett's death is the greatest character in literature. So there you go. High praise from Chris on the text line. Have you got audiobook recommendations that are slightly different from... I often find the narrator... Suddenly there's an extra element to the audiobook.
That is completely... I know exactly what you're going to say.
So you could take a bog standard book, but the right narrator kind of elevates it. Like
without
anything. You take a bog standard song, the right singer elevates it. It's
without
no different.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That you have to like the narrator. You have to be in with them to take the journey. And yeah, there's lots of things. I mean, the funny part of it was I my husband, after a stroke, found it hard to read, to concentrate to read. So I introduced him to audiobooks, and I gave him my log on for Audible, which was the single biggest mistake I ever made, because I have thousands of books on my Audible.
But the algorithm keeps suggesting probably what? World War II biopics of
a lot
Russian
of Jack
generals.
Reacher. I'm not going to lie, Jack Reacher.
Listen, I'm going to defend him there. I mean, Jack Reacher, you can't sometimes, you know what I mean?
Him.
You can't beat an old Jack Reacher novel.
I know, and he listens to a lot of Bosch. So the guy who plays him does some of the narration now. But it just depends. Narration is such a big part. I listen to loads of things. What I do is I go into the free bit and then I test out a few things, and then I go, yeah, I can be bothered with you or not. And if I find a narrator I really like, I go and see what other books they've read.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you can find a writer.
Stephen Fry's new book is Odyssey, you know, which is kind of the latest in the kind of Greek epics that he's been doing. And he is an amazing narrator of his own stories.
You would listen to him talk about anything.
Great,
like,
so
he's so
I have it like that, like you with Terry Pratchett's. I have it there, and I'm like, I don't know. I want to wait until I know I have the perfect kind of runway in front of me, where I have an opportunity. It won't be interrupted. Anyway, listen, we've kind of digressed a little bit, but there's some great recommendations.
Thank you.
So you mentioned kind of Terry Pratchett's. Which book in particular did you say you're reading at the moment?
I'm currently reading Witches Abroad.
But any of them you'd recommend?
There's only 41 of them.
Ladder of Years by Anne Taylor kind of got honourable mention, but going up onto the bookshelf, The Vanishing Act of Esme Lennox from Maggie O'Farrell. I suspect lots of people listening probably have read Hamnet, which was a great, great book.
She's a magnificent writer. Do I have to physically leave this book? Because I love this book.
No, you can bring that book, but it's metaphorically up there on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Niamh, listen, it's been great chatting to you.
You too,
and,
as always.
Good to see you again. Niamh Kavanagh.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.